man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hey, and we are. We are surviving up here in North Dakota and in whatever state you're in, too. And we will survive. We will answer President Donald Trump's question asked in July of 2017 in Krasinski Square, Poland, where he said, the question is, do you have the will to survive as a people, as a Western civilization, as the people who write symphonies? He said it right there in that speech. I love it. It's the best three-word sentence I've ever heard. We write symphonies, period. Three words. Boy, an awful lot's expressed in that sentence. What did the president mean when he said we? Who are we? We write symphonies. He's talking about somebody. Yeah, he's talking about you and your people. Who are the people who have written the symphonies and done all the other art and science that's of note? Oh, okay, the engineer, I felt the engineer break in on the air there, and there they are. Okay, we got Richard in New Hampshire. Oh, Richard, I'm going to talk about New Hampshire in just a moment, and we'll go to you in a moment. Then, Richard's gone. Richard, come on back. I made you wait too long. My fault. Shame on me. And Dr. Kelly's in California. But I'd especially like to get you back, Richard, since I hung you up. And we also have, we got George in Texas. Let me talk a little bit more about the border. And this goes out to you, Richard, New Hampshire. We've got a 1,954-mile border with Mexico. How many of you know the length of our border with Canada? Think about it for just a moment, because this is also a problem. Our border with Canada, you're going to be surprised at this number, but then I'm going to whittle it down for you. Our border with Canada, Canada being the second largest nation in the world by expanse, and the U.S. the fourth largest in the world, is 5,525 miles. That's a big border. 1,538 of that is the border between Canada and Alaska. There's no reason to exclude that. Let's just for the sake of getting the lower 48 border, that border is 4,000 miles long from New England to Washington. 4,000 miles. With all kinds of really interesting terrain to have to guard, like Lake Superior, for example, water, all kinds of forest. And that's a pretty tough border to guard. But now the special problem comes in. Canada, with idiots like Justin Trudeau running Canada, a bunch of idiots, a bunch of open borders, globalist, kumbaya, crazy people, they are an open border nation. Just about anybody can get into Canada. And once they get in, Canada will treat them royally. So if this is another giant hole in our ship, if you can get into Canada, now you've got a 4,000 mile border. You can walk across or drive or whatever, swim across. So we got a problem there too. We have got to have, now the days of yesteryear where Canada was not an open borders nation and Canadians didn't necessarily want to come to the United States and Americans didn't necessarily want to go to Canada. Canadians were happy in Canada, prosperous, successful European people, building great and beautiful cities and farms. They were quite content to be Canadians in Canada. We were quite content to be Americans in America. And so this great 4,000-mile border was the world's longest unguarded border. And that worked just fine, which is what happens in a what? A homogeneous society. It's all made up of the same kind of people who get along with each other wonderfully. It's not a multi-culti, mishmash, mush of fighting, squabbling, warring, antagonistic peoples. So you can leave your front door unlocked. You can leave, you're not going to believe this, some of you younger folks, you can leave your keys in your car. Yes, when I was a boy, my mom would leave the keys in the car. The front door was rarely locked. There were periods of years in which our front door lock was broken. We didn't even bother to fix it. So the gates in the backyard didn't even have a lock on them. They were just swinging gates. So we've got to have a border wall. And it's not the subject. It should not. This is my plea to the president. And, you know, we're going to hear from Ann Coulter. You better believe it. If there's a DACA deal, I'll predict something for you, folks. If there's a DACA exchange, a sucker move for puny $5 billion funding, Ann Coulter will write a column saying this is the worst deal in the history of America. And she will, part of the column, the title for the column might be the title of her 2015 blockbuster book, Adios, America. And she wrote that book before the Trump phenomenon came up over the horizon. Donald Trump is not mentioned once in that book, Adios, America, which is a brilliant book by Ann Coulter, written at a time when you read the book, you realize she had decided that maybe we were past saving, that America was so far down the toilet, you know, we were two or three flushes down the toilet. And it was adios. And then she experienced, as all of us did, the arrival of, like a miracle, the arrival of Donald Trump. But I think she might title her column, Adios, America, if DACA is given. Oh, and this would be a case, by the way, I like this phrase, whoever came up with this, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Right now, with the Democrats being on TV with this clown, Nancy Pelosi, going, I'm not going to give $1 for a border wall. No, that's not her. That's Schumer, I guess, saying that. I'm not going to give a dollar for a border wall. There will be no funding. I like Schumer goes, Mr. President, there will be no wall. I like the way he speaks, too. Looking over the top of his glasses, looking straight at the floor. The guy is a picture of posture. Mr. President, there will be no wall. You must give up your wall, Mr. President. It's not Donald Trump's wall. It's our wall, you dope, Schumer. You piece of work. It's our wall. You don't tell us we can't have a wall. Gee, I'll bet there's no wall around the Schumer residence, which is probably a big estate, or other members of your family. I'm sure they don't have fences and walls and gates and locks and doors and bodyguards with high-powered weapons under their jacket. I'm sure you don't have that, Mr. Schumer. You're not going to tell us we can't have a wall around our country. It's not your country, pal. It's our country. So let's go to the phones here. And I don't know if Richard's back. He's not yet. We got Murr in Wisconsin. We got David in San Francisco. Let's start out with, and Dr. Kelly, So we're going to go this way, folks, as quickly as we can. We're going to go Dr. Kelly, California, David in San Francisco, and Murr in Wisconsin. Dr. Kelly, you're on the air.
All right. I just want to say that where there's a will, there's a wall. And I want to thank you for your rants, because Inspector Kelso, they are like symphonies to my ears. And I would like you to start illustrating these memes again. Like, here's a good meme. Hi, this is Senator Kamala Harris, and I'm holding Dr. Kelly for ransom for $1. And that $1 is going to go to build the wall. And start reading the good, all these great Trump books. Dude, I just got another stack of Trump books. And Happy New Year, where there's a will, there's a wall. Remember the video, where there's a will, there's an A, for study nerds like me?
Yeah, well, Dr. Kelly, you have the crucial point there, which is, and that's what I think this show is useful towards, is building up the will. We have to have the will. If we, the founders, settler people of America, this is our country, land that we love. This is our country. We
now
built
beside it. Her and guide her. You know,
we
it.
We built this place, folks. We cleared these forests. We built these roads. No, the slaves did not clear the forest, and the slaves did not farm the land. And they did not slug it out through the North Dakota winter at minus 30 degrees with 30 mile an hour winds. You know where that puts the wind chill, folks? Probably somewhere.
Amen.
At minus
60 below. I've been there, Kelso. I have been there. Yep. In Minnesota.
Yeah. This is our land. This is the country. And this is part of the most shameful part of this is think of our ancestors. Think of them spinning in their graves. People who died, who froze, who suffered to build this country. People who didn't have electricity. They didn't have the internal combustion engine. They had a horse or an ox. And they had maybe a cart. And they had their, their good woman.
Ali Forge comes to mind. You know, those real men. Those real men that fought and stood it out. Right. And I'm grateful and thankful for them.
They had their good and great women of that time with their eight beautiful children. you read these stories, as North Dakotans, people here, their children walked, they did walk through that incredible snow and cold to schools. And
it was uphill both ways. Don't forget that part.
Three of them would get on a horse, and ride to the school and so on. But anyway, that we'll save that for another time. But this is our country. It is our country. We built it. Slaves did not build this country.
My great grandpa built the Bay Bridge, and they built that stuff with good parts, not with crap from China that is disintegrating and falling apart.
Yeah, so we have
I'm
nothing.
Folks, I'll let you go to the rest of your great callers, and thank you, Kelso, and start reading these Trump books, start drawing some pictures, and kick butt. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Kelly. And expanding on her point, we European folks have nothing to feel guilty about in the glorious record that we have achieved in this country. It is all to be proud of. On the question of slavery, who, ask you a question. Who in the whole history of the world, who abolished slavery? What group of people abolished, this is a $64 question. Tick, 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 tock, tick, tock. Ding. Question, who abolished slavery? Europeans did. Not anybody else. We abolished slavery. We did not create it. And no other people in the world ever abolished slavery. And, in fact, slavery exists right now in Africa, in Asia. Millions of people are slaves right now. In fact, large numbers of the people coming up in caravans and elsewise from Latin America are slaves. Have you heard the phrase human traffickers? What are the people brought by human traffickers? They're slaves. That's exactly what they are. And America's role in slavery, aside from the fact that we abolished it, we fought a war in which 620,000 of our finest young men died in a battle. It's not the thing. It had nothing to do with slavery. Of course, the Civil War had a lot to do with slavery. But they fought and died over this question. What was the role of slavery in America? I'm going to give you a really short primer here on slavery. What did slavery amount to in America? Well, it amounted to 300,000 Africans who were transported across the Atlantic at considerable risk and considerable danger. 300,000 Africans who were brought across the Atlantic over a period of several centuries and who were sold as slaves in places like Charleston, South Carolina, and Richmond, Virginia, and Newport, Rhode Island, and New York City. Slaves were sold in New York City. I have an ancestor who was the, let me think about it. I got to think for a second. In 1695, my ancestor, the governor of Rhode Island, I'll get my facts better in another, I'm doing this from memory. There's so many, we all have so many ancestors, it's hard to remember. In 1695, in his will, he left his, what did he call it? He left his, I think his word was, he left his Negro to his wife. And he was the governor of Rhode Island. What was that slavery? What were guys like my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather? It was, they made a few extra bucks, they thought, by getting suckered. That was a sucker job. A bunch of con men, salesmen sold them on the idea that, hey, you know, I'll sell you 5 slaves and you can harvest more acres on your plantation, generally in the South. Well, that's been studied closely by economists. 90% of the money that was made by the slaves went back into the slaves. It was a very high overhead operation. So if you bought 5 slaves and they made you, I'll just make up numbers. They made you $10,000 more money on the extra land harvested. You sank 9,000 of that back into the slaves for their food, their upkeep, their housing, their clothing, and so on, their well-being, which I assure you the coyotes in jolly old Mexico are not doing with their human trafficking today. They're not expending money taking care of anybody. But the idiots who fell for the stupid slavery idea, which were a tiny minority of Americans, wealthier, you know, plantation owners, tiny minority of the population, very small number of people, they put 90% of the money back into the slaves. And off the top of that was their 10% profit. So that $10,000 made by the slaves, the slave owner got $1,000. Wow. In exchange for what? Was that worth it, slave owner? The degradation in the quality of your world and your life and the change in the nature of your relationship to, you know, your fellow man and, you know, God and life itself? No, it wasn't worth it. It was a bad, dumb idea, and we got rid of it. We don't need to be ashamed that we instituted slavery. We didn't. We took the practice that was time immemorial practice of slavery in Africa. We bought some of those slaves from the tribal leaders. We bought some of their slaves and brought them over in ships. What a dumb idea. About as dumb as DACA, if we buy that idea. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
What I hate is most folks don't seem to care at all. What I hate is looking up and seeing chemtrails in a clear blue sky today. What I hate is hitting roadblocks on a highway in my way. And what I live for is a chance to change and be everything I can be. What I love is someone bright enough to see.
Well, we're back, folks. And I just wanted to pull up an anecdote I read during these breaks here, and I learned stuff. Mentioning the slavery in America, it was not a profitable undertaking. It was a bad idea. It lowered the wages of the more than 90% of the white population who never owned a slave. Their wages, their return on their farming was greatly reduced by the competition of slave labor. So if you were in West Virginia, where Stonewall Jackson lived, that part of Virginia that's now West Virginia, Stonewall Jackson had slaves, and he was making a big mistake. He was lowering the wages of white farmers around him there in that hardscrabble country of West Virginia. So shame on Stonewall Jackson for doing that. But what's the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say? Well, Stonewall Jackson was teaching his slaves to read so that they could read the Bible. He taught them to read. He also conducted a weekly Sunday school with his slaves and other slaves to teach them the Bible. And it's sort of the sad picture today. Some of the descendants of Stonewall Jackson have penned letters calling for the removal of statues of their ancestor because he was a racist. This great, you know, greatest military commander, this great Southerner, and this great man. So in any event, and, you know, folks like Jefferson had slaves, and I forget the exact quote, but he said that it's certain that the slaves will someday be free. But in the rest of the paper he wrote on that letter or paper, he said it's equally certain that they cannot live under the same government as we Europeans. But Jefferson recognized it was a dumb institution. He inherited it from his family. And were slaves, again, I don't want to, you know, I'm not diving overboard if I say this. I love being politically incorrect. This is certainly politically incorrect. If I were a black man living in Nigeria, what is now Nigeria, in 1780, or any of the years of the slave trade across the Atlantic, if I were living in Nigeria in 1780 and I were the slave of a black tribe, which is what all these blacks who were brought across the Atlantic, they were the slaves. They had already been enslaved by black tribal leaders in a continent in which slavery was universal and, was the basic institution. You went to war with a neighboring tribe. You grabbed the women and you put ropes around the necks of the men and beat them into being slaves. And then when the white man showed up on your beaches, they were sold. You sold some of your slaves to the white men who traded, you know, various Western manufactured goods for the slaves. But if I were a black man in Nigeria and I were one of those slaves, you know, I would, and somebody said to me, okay, Kelso, you can continue to stay here in Nigeria as a slave of this tribe, or see that ship out there off the beach there? That's a slave ship. You can go on that ship and you're going to South Carolina, where you are going to have to work for the rest of your life on a plantation, harvesting crops. You'll have a cabin in which you live. You'll have clothing provided. You will be fed. And in some cases, you'll have a slave owner like Stonewall Jackson who will teach you to read and have Bible classes with you. But you're going to be fed and cared for to a certain standard because you will be working that farm for the rest of your life. And if you're sick or weak, you're not going to be able to put in any good work. So the farm needs you to be strong and healthy. When you get up in the morning to continue harvesting, you're going to need to be well rested if you're going to work a long day and pick a lot of crop or plant a lot of crop. So you're going to be a valuable investment for the person who buys you as a slave. And we'll get to the moral of the story here in just a minute. I would get on the boat. We'll get to that right after this break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com. Educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Many people write about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. My wife and I both use Extendivite and are very pleased with the results. It has helped to stabilize our blood pressure and to make both of us feel healthier. Good product and goodbye. So far, so good. I've been taking Extendivite 3 times a day, only a short while now, but already I've noticed the circulation in my hands and feet improving. They tingle. I like the idea of taking something herbal rather than pills. I take Extendivite 3 times a day every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
The point I wanted to make when we went to the break is, would I get on that slaver ship anchored out in the bay off the coast of Nigeria there, or Guinea or Ghana or Ivory Coast or wherever, what became Liberia, where we set up a whole nation set up by Americans, by the American, an ancestor of mine was the head of that, Bushrod Washington, the nephew of George Washington. But the what was the American Colonization Society? Would I get on that ship? You bet. I wouldn't even have to hesitate or think about it. To go from being a slave of a brutal tribe in Nigeria, a place where life was nasty and short, and end up on a plantation in South Carolina or wherever, Rhode Island, where I would be cared for well enough that I'd be a good worker in the field who'd live a long life, have a lot of kids, which the slave owner wanted me to have. So And, you know, and he's going to treat me well enough. I'm going to be around his children, his little children. I'm going to care for his little children. So he's going to have a decent relationship with me. I'm going to be caring for his little babies. He's going to be trusting me. So was slavery wrong? Of course it was. Was it stupid? Of course it was. And I'm looking here at the Civil War. We ended it. We ended it. I'm looking at the revised casualties for the Civil War. I'm remembering the old number of 620,000. It's been revised upward. Scholars now think between 650,000 and 850,000, most of whom on both sides of the battlefield were deaths due to disease in the battlefield. For example, in the South, 164,000 troops died of disease in the battlefield. 94,000 died of wounds. On the North, 111,000 died of wounds and 250,000 died of disease in the battlefield. Those are, of course, our finest, youngest, finest, bravest men on both sides dying in a battle over slavery, which never needed to happen and wouldn't have happened. That war would not have happened if some patriotic Americans at the very beginning had said to those initial hucksters who brought slave ships into the harbor and said, hey, wouldn't this be cool? Hey, you know, money for nothing and chicks for free. Look at this, slaves. Hey, give me $500 and I'll give you a slave. What a bad deal. What a sucker job that was. If we'd been on the docks and said to the guy, hey, Jack, turn your ship around and go back where you came from. That's what was needed. But in any event, we went through the Civil War. Meanwhile, we built the country. It's our country. It's worth defending. This belongs to our people. And those blacks who live among us today as the descendants of those 300,000 blacks who were brought across the Atlantic stupidly, hey, those are our honored, respected neighbors. And we cherish good relations with our Indian neighbors. This was also their land in their Stone Age fashion when we arrived, in their very small numbers. Why were the numbers of Indians small in America? Oh, and by the way, speaking about the hazards of coming across the Atlantic for the slaves, I had five ancestors on the Mayflower, grandparents and cousins on the Mayflower. Some of them are not grandparents because they died. They never had offspring. Half the people on the Mayflower, 100 passengers, half of them died in the first winter on the boat, in the harbor, in the bay. They died right there that winter. Privation and risk and danger is not something we did not share with black people. Why were the Indians so sparse in the North American continent, at least our part of it? They were more numerous down in rich, wealthy, luxurious Mexico, where there were pretty good-sized tribes of Indians, because there was a lot of food and fruit just hanging off the trees down there. But up here, in cold and bleak by comparison, North America, the United States and Canada, very sparse population, which subject to over the millennia, frequent die-offs. If you had a bad winter, a lot of your tribe died, froze to death, including the babies. That was a very common occurrence in Indian tribes. The babies would freeze to death. And so the population never grew to much of anything. When our Mayflower and Jamestown and New Amsterdam ancestors arrived, there was a sparse population of people living a Neolithic Stone Age life. And we brought them all kinds of groovy things, which were quite a blessing to them. And we have treated them very well in modern times. Again, if I had to choose, you know, like, gee, what would be a nice thing to be? Being an Indian in America right now would be a pretty cool thing to be. You'd be pretty set up for life, especially if you're a North Dakota Indian. You'd be a rich man. But I'm quite happy and quite proud to be a European. And I hope and I expect that there will be, that the European lands created by my ancestors, I don't want them spinning in their graves. I want them saying, well done. Well done, true and faithful servant. Well done for keeping our civilization, for making America great again, putting America first. And a century from now, 5 centuries from now, 10 centuries from now, people that look just like you out there in the audience and just like my family will be our descendants. We'll still be here and we'll still be the same people. That's the mission. That's the goal. And achieving that, that's why all this fighting over the border and over everything else. It's over that question. Will we survive? The question that Donald Trump asked at Kuczynski Square. Brilliant, brilliant question. Do we have the will to survive? If we don't, we won't. If we do, we will. We'll find a way. And that's what this show is dedicated to, is building that morale, building that will to survive. And I'm free on this show to kind of wander around the subject a little more freely than somebody on a big network who is more hemmed in by elements of political correctness. We don't we don't got none of that here. Okay, let's go to a caller. The more politically incorrect, the better. David in San Francisco, are you there? Still.
Oh, how are you, James? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, and thank you for being such a patient man.
Oh, no sweat. You know, that earlier caller, the woman, did she mention that her father, or probably her grandfather, helped build the Bay Bridge out here?
You know what? I missed that, if she did say that. Oh, she did. Yeah, the engineer confirms. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. We've got a new Bay Bridge. You know, in the earthquake in 1989, one of the sections kind of collapsed. So they tore down the whole thing and rebuilt it. But they rebuilt it with cheap junk Chinese steel. And I think I've called you before, and I've told you I'm a Green Party member. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. So both sides of the aisle were the ones that suckered us into buying a broken bridge on the day it was delivered. It was Arnold and Willie Brown. And the two of them helped. They guaranteed that we would not use American steel. They went out of their way to help create a foundry in China that would custom build this bridge. And there were very few repeating parts. It was almost every part was custom built. And as I understand it, they had 20,000 inspectors, and virtually every one of those inspectors discovered defective parts and were refusing to accept delivery on defective foundry work. Yet yes. This one guy overrid 20,000 refusals and accepted delivery, and so now we've got a bridge that was broken on delivery. It cost us 48 times cost overrun. It was a $6 billion bridge with $6 billion more in financing. So we got a $12 billion bridge that was broken the day it was delivered. And so, you know, thanks Arnold and thank Willie Brown for that joke. But
and just looking at your number there, that's half the cost of a complete wall.
Oh, well, and it was cheap junk, and the lawsuits, I mean, don't get me started on the fraud that was. It was an amazing fraud. The other thing, I heard you talking about slavery there, and have you ever heard of the Hazard Letter?
Okay, help me with my memory.
Well, apparently, before the Civil War, you know, the South, the Confederacy, were deciding whether or not to fire the first shot. And the British, who were in league with the South, the British were basically trying to trick the South into seceding so they could split up the 13 colonies. And by doing so, then they'd be able to come back, you know, divide and conquer, right? So okay. A guy named Hazard was behind the scenes in all of it, and he was trying to convince the South not to support slavery, but to basically go with the company store idea. And if you freed people, then they would have to be responsible for their own food, clothing, shelter, health care, everything else. And if you did the company store, they would think they were free, but they would really owe more money than they were ever able to make while, you know, in employment. So the idea that the hazard letter wasn't accepted and the South decided to secede, they walked themselves into an interesting trap. And Lincoln figured out that the British were secretly behind him and did an embargo of England. So England backed out right away, and Lincoln was able to basically finish the war. But, the hazard letter was...
That's very interesting, David. I'm going to look that up. And you know, I love what I learned from you guys out there in the audience who more widely read than I am. The here's an interesting piece to the puzzle you just brought us there. And that is this. Scholars have done extensive research into what was it like to be a slave? What was slave life like? And a very complete picture has been built. And some of those interesting studies are comparisons of what was it like to be for instance, a child worker in a New England clothing factory, or to be growing peanuts or cotton or corn in, let's say, North Carolina. And the interesting thing
is... I think it was pretty miserable both ways.
Well, actually, here's what they found. They compared the clothing, the accommodations, the health, the diet, the recreation of the two populations. The northern, and it wasn't just children, but northern factory workers. And here's what they came up very convincingly, very conclusively, rather, better adverb. The result is this. It was more healthy, better fed, and easier to be a slave in the South than to be a factory worker in the North at the same period.
You'd probably be chopped to death by the machines, right? Well, some of those looms would drag you into them.
Well, it wasn't quite as hideous as that, but it was hideous nonetheless in this way. Your hours of work, and this is easy. They have, you know, they went back to scholars, the log books, the hours worked, and, you know, so on, et cetera. The food and the costs of workers. This is all noted by, you know, the accountants for both in the South and the North. And you compare those books. In the North, you worked longer hours. In the North, you were fed more poorly. Your diet was worse. And as you mentioned, the employer took no responsibility for your diet. You had to figure that out on your own at home. But in the South, the employers, you know, brought you food because he wanted you to work as hard as possible. In the South, the plantation owner was quite concerned about the health of his slaves. So if he had five slaves and he had spent a lot of money on those slaves on the dock there in Charleston, if a slave got sick and died, hey, that was a dead loss, pardon the pun. And so he wanted the worker to be healthy and so on. In the North, if you lost one of your workers in your factory, no sweat. Hire another one. You know, there's no cost. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's your company store idea. Absolutely. And I've seen a speech. Ralph Nader gave a speech about slavery economics versus sweatshop economics. And he breaks it all down. And in a way, what you're saying is true. But the fallacy about slavery in the South is that they were more like work camps owned by huge corporations, which were colonies basically owned by the British again. And so they owned like 500 slaves, or they owned 1,000 slaves, versus like an average shoemaker in town who was just trying to work for his own. These, if somebody owned 500 slaves, shoot, they would have 50 of those slaves making shoes, and all of a sudden the shoemaker in town who was a free guy, he wasn't able to compete against 50 slaves making shoes, and he would go broke versus, you know, some mega corporation that had 500 or 1,000 slaves. So, yes, Nader went through that whole description of it and how false it was, even to this day, we don't really have the concept that the 13 colonies were 13 corporations chartered by the king, and that those corporations had 13 kinds of money. You couldn't, you know, use New York money in New Jersey. Pennsylvania money had to be only used in Pennsylvania. Georgia money could only be used in Georgia. Well, the other thing I was going to raise,
let me get to your point here. Just what you mentioned, I don't think there were many people that had 500 slaves. My second cousin,
well, it wasn't George people; Washington, it was companies.
Well, I think the typical slave owner was a plantation owner, and my second cousin George Washington. You know, this is vague memory, but I think he had about 100 slaves, and Jefferson had, I think, a similar kind of a size of his plantation. So I don't think you could handle many more than 100 slaves, and there were many people with much smaller numbers of slaves. But going back to that comparison again, the scholars have done the research. They were able to check the diet. They got more vitamins, more protein, healthier diet. They got more sunshine than the factory workers. They had fewer diseases. They lived longer.
I would bet a lot of that's regional.
Well, there is a comparison of northern factory workers and southern slaves.
Well, I mean, like Mississippi is pretty scrub and swamp. Yeah, and versus someplace in Alabama or another.
Hang on, we got an ad going here, so we'll be right back, folks.
Oh, sure.
Stickers online ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to libertystickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's libertystickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Big John. Big John.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Nobody seemed to know where John called home. He just drifted into town and stayed all alone. He didn't say much, he kind of quiet and shy. And if you spoke at all, you just said hi to Big John. Somebody said he came from New Orleans, where he got in a fight over a Cajun queen, and a crashing blow from a huge right hand sent a Louisiana fella to the promised land.
Big hey, we're jump. Back, folks. Thanks for tuning us in. And we've got David in San Francisco on the phone. Are you still there, David?
Oh, sure am. Yeah, and you got one other guy in hold here. I don't want to hog the rest of the hour.
Okay, well, I just want to thank you, David, for calling in. Here, just to close out this call, we're kind of doing a review here of wars, American wars. And remember, I called Donald Trump the peace president. And a little bit of bad news in the last week. In that tug of war that's going on within the Trump administration between the Trump team and people who think like Trump and the deep state, who are, they're in there. They're larded in throughout, everything in Washington. There's no way Donald Trump can escape that. And he's got this clown, John Bolton, in his administration. John Bolton is, notorious as one of the, like the super Uber hawk killers of earlier Gulf and Iraq wars and Afghanistan and so on. John Bolton never saw, he's like John McCain, and he never met a war he didn't like.
Right.
And John Bolton seems to have pushed. Donald Trump said, we're getting out of Syria in 30 days. And we were all jumping up and down with, for joy with that beautiful decision by the peace president, Donald Trump. He has now been thwarted by the, the generals and the other people in place there who it's now the timeline's been rolled out to a longer timeline, and even there's now even the rubbery indefinite parameter that we're not leaving Syria till ISIS is exterminated. Don't hold your breath, boys and girls.
Checks in the mail.
Yeah, checks in the mail. Yeah, when is ISIS going to be exterminated, especially since we're busy creating it?
Right. Hey, Ren, before I go, a friend of mine sent me a joke over the Facebook. Let's see. Apparently, they got some walls down at Mar-a-Lago, but the illegals still got in.
Yeah. There's a wall around Mar-a-Lago. I used to live right across the water there, the lagoon, the Lago part. I used to live across the lagoon from Mar-a-Lago and used to kayak right up to it on both sides, the Mar side, the Atlantic, and the Lago side, the Intracoastal Waterway. But yeah, there is a wall. I can't remember now. I think it was a pink wall, like a stucco wall. I can't remember it now. But there is a wall around Mar-a-Lago, and But let me give you this couple numbers here. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll look forward to your next call, David. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good week.
Thanks for that information about that catastrophic Bay Bridge. We'll be back right after this break, folks. Oh, that's the end of our show. Okay, my gosh. Time flies when you're having fun. I'll see you all again tomorrow night, Monday night, from 9 to 10 Eastern Time. Thanks for joining us here at the Trump Phenomenon.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.